Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you.
Episode 166, Personalised Care. I have consciously chosen the title of this episode to be personalised care. But what I've had some requests to discuss is that so-called outside of guidance care. I hate the term outside of guidance, and yes, I know it's used quite a lot in services, but I want to shift the conversation. So I'm going to talk about personalised care today, why it's important, and why it's something we really need to get our heads around. It seems unbelievable to me that Better Births, the National Maternity Review, was in 2016, 8 years ago. And I can't help but feel that whilst lots of good came from that review, in some aspects, it's been a missed opportunity. And that's not necessarily anyone's fault. Part of the problem was a worldwide pandemic. But it was an opportunity to put maternity at the top of the agenda. And I can't help but feel that it's slipped down again. Chronic staffing shortages have meant that continuity of care, the ideal, has been quite difficult to implement. And although some units have gone some way towards it, we're not there yet. Why am I mentioning Better Births? Well, the main strapline for Better Births was safe and personalised care. And it's going to be easier to deliver properly personalised care when there's continuity of care and the midwife gets to know the woman and the woman gets to know the midwife. No question. But we are where we are. And so today I'm going to focus a bit on personalised care. Some general things to think about, but also how that feels for the obstetrician, the obstetric view, because that's what listeners have been asking for. As is my habit, preparing for the podcast, I've done a bit of reading. So I'm going to start by talking about what is personalised care. Because wouldn't you know, there's an actual definition. I've turned to personalised care and support planning guidance for local maternity systems. This was published in 2021. And it gives that little intro about personalised care being central to Better Births and then incorporated into the NHS long-term plan, which in my mind kind of gobbled up the maternity transformation programme. This gives a definition of universal personalised care. People having proactive, personalised conversations which focus on what matters to them and paying attention to their clinical needs as well as their wider health and well-being. I mean, it's slightly unbelievable that we actually need a definition of that. That is obviously what we should be doing in healthcare, isn't it? Thinking about when someone has an illness or condition, how important things are to them and what their personal goals are, both clinically and holistically in their life. So it's a no-brainer. Then the document goes on to talk about personalised care and support planning. It talks about holistic initial assessment of women's health and wellbeing needs and the woman working hand in hand with her healthcare professionals to complete this assessment. The agreed personalised care and support plan should set out the decisions she makes about the care and support she wants to receive. It then go on to show a little Venn diagram. And they talk about personalised care and informed consent and the kind of overlap in the middle being informed decision making. And that's interesting because this is all wrapped up in consent. And in fact, I thought to go with this episode, I would do a specific episode on consent. So far, that's all super dreamy. We have conversations with women and we think about what's important to them and we design the care around them. So you might ask, what's the problem? Well, part of the problem is that we actually work in a massively regulated system. So the woman is thinking that she wants all these choices. And these are the things that are important to her, and that's super straightforward. For the clinician, they're thinking, well, that may go against this guidance, that guidance, the other guidance. And as a service, we get audited against that guidance and we have to be either compliant with NICE guidance or justify why we're not compliant with NICE guidance. And maybe I'll get told off if I don't follow that guidance. Yes, I know we theoretically work in a no-blame culture, but believe me, that's not how it actually feels all the time. How am I going to marry up what the woman wants and holistically caring for her? Because after all, that is the whole point of the maternity service. And I don't want to give you the impression that all guidance is negative and enforcing things. There is guidance with good reason to try and ensure that we're providing the right standard of care to women across the maternity system. And we are operating within the constraints, not only presented by guidance, but the limits presented by staffing, capacity, what drugs we do and don't have available, and all sorts of other parameters. So in my mind, I think personalised care comes where we try and marry the two together. I appreciate it may be relatively easy for me. A consultant who's been in the department for many years to support women with personalised care plans and requests. But as a more junior member of staff, someone earlier in their career, it can feel very daunting and potentially quite risky, which is why I was thrilled a little while ago to discover a collaboration between the Personalised Care Institute and NHS Maternity to design a small maternity teaching module to help maternity clinicians think through what is personalised care and also how to apply it in a clinical situation. When I did the training, initially, I thought, this training isn't really for me. This is my bread and butter. This is what I do day in, day out, have this sort of conversation. But then I realised that actually it was really valuable because within my maternity service, I am one end of a spectrum. I know that many of the women that ask for something a bit outside the norm end up coming to me for that very reason. And whilst some of my colleagues also work in this very holistic way, as with many things, there is a spectrum of practice, and some clinicians struggle to appreciate and understand why a woman would want to do something different to what they're recommending. It isn't that they don't want to support women. They just come at it with a more risk perspective. But if you're starting out in your maternity career, or you're partway through and you're struggling with these conversations, then I highly recommend that e-learning training module to help you think about how you might approach this sort of conversation. Like I just said, there's a spectrum of practice within maternity professionals. There's also a spectrum of requests and ideas within the women we're caring for. Sometimes it's as simple as, I don't want to be induced at the point you want me to be induced. And that's relatively straightforward, and in fact has become so commonplace that we are getting to a point where many of the midwives, supported by the consultant midwife, can have that conversation. You may have listened to some of my episodes on fetal monitoring and intermittent auscultation with Dr. Kirsten Small. And when one of the key things a woman wants is intermittent auscultation and birth in the birth centre rather than continuous CTG, she's obviously making a very rational and well-informed choice, and we're the ones that are giving her advice that is not evidence-based. We can find ourselves in the weird position of saying to her, well, I have to tell you that this is the recommendation and this is the national guidance for these reasons, but yes, I agree, the evidence isn't there. One of the things I slightly struggle with is we then make a very specific, personalised set of birth preferences, a written document for the staff to give staff confidence and know that this has been pre-agreed and discussed, and for the woman so that it's set out what are the implications of the choices she's making. And whilst that is a good tool in terms of making sure the woman has understood the information you've given her, and written information is important in backing up that decision making when you look at the guidance on how to consent people, it can sometimes feel a little bit defensive. We've had a conversation with her. We've told her the pros and cons. We've given her time to think about it. We've made a plan, usually by 36 or 37 weeks, because most of the personalised care we're doing is intrapartum choices. And then we're laying it all out for her in black and white. And I do sometimes worry that women find that quite kind of in your face, almost risk averse, defensive medicine. But some of them have said, actually, I found that document really helpful to read through. Therefore, as with everything, it's personalised, isn't it? It's got to be individual. and what works for one person doesn't work for another. Much more difficult, I think, are the conversations where a woman wants to do something that really goes against what I think is safe. It's rare, but it does happen, and that's difficult because you've got to contain your own emotions, your own opinions, and your fear of something going horribly wrong because she wants to do something that is way beyond the spectrum of practice that you're comfortable with and used to. And often that is about having a series of conversations, making that woman feel well supported, exploring the issues with her. And this is where time comes into it, because the earlier you can start having the conversation, the longer you can have to build trust and a relationship with that woman as a midwife or as an obstetrician. And you might find some middle ground. It may be that you work out what are the elements of her preferences that are really, really non-negotiable, most important to her, and what are a bit less so. And then you can adapt things a bit with her and have a series of conversations in which she may modify and change her plans. And it's not that I'm trying to coerce her into changing plans. It's just I'm trying to make sure she's really well informed. And often you can find a middle ground where things become what you feel may be a bit safer, but which meet her needs. Sometimes, though, we do support plans and preferences that we think are well beyond our scope of practice, because that's what a woman wants. And it is our job to do that. It's her body, it's her birth, she's an autonomous person, and if she's got capacity to make those decisions, those are her decisions. But that can leave us as health professionals in a very uncomfortable place. And that's when the members of the team need support. I work very closely with my consultant midwife, and indeed we have a joint birth options clinic now, because we do have a considerable number of women who want or need that more bespoke care planning than the sort of slight diversion outside of guidance, the more basic personalised care planning, which is now well within the remit of the continuity of care team leader with the support of the consultant midwife. But for women that want something quite complex or that has more obstetric implications, such as maybe a home VBAC or twins at home or a combination of multiple high-risk factors, then we will see a woman together jointly, ideally around 24 weeks, so that the conversation can evolve over time and we'll come to a final decision with her and possibly a series of birth preferences at 36 weeks. Another key aspect of personalised care is that I've discovered for a lot of women, it doesn't necessarily matter what the eventual outcome is, what the eventual birth is like. And that sounds really uncaring and stupid. But actually, I've had women who have wanted something and they have known that staff didn't agree and that this was a high-risk situation. And even though actually they ended up with a very different birth from what they'd expected or hoped for, because they had felt completely supported in pregnancy and able to make those decisions and make those decisions in their own time, and then when it came down to it, either in labour or if their waters broke, be able to stepwise change those decisions to whatever the eventual outcome was, they still feel that they've had a really good experience because they've been in control of their birth, whatever that has been, and they've really appreciated that, and it's made them feel safe and it's made them feel at peace with whatever the eventual outcome was, because they feel they were taking those decisions and directing their care from the get-go right through to the end. So I think when you see women in clinic that want something that makes you feel uncomfortable or that you find challenging, really try and hear and understand why they're asking for what they're asking for, and set aside your own biases and conditioning from the births you've seen, the guidance you work under, your own cultural background, and try and hear and understand why she's asking for these particular things and what's important to her and what are the key elements, and tell her that we're going to explore this and draw in other members of the team that are available, such as your consultant midwife or your PMA, professional midwifery advocate, or your obstetric consultant, and work through with her, because don't get stuck on her initial ask and how terrifying that might feel to you. Building that relationship, building that trust may lead her to a very different decision, or it might not. It might be that you do need to support that. The other aspect of personalised care planning, which is difficult for us as professionals, is when things go wrong, because they do. You do get burnt. I have had women that I've supported, some of whom have been asking for things that are way beyond my comfort zone, but also some that are asking for things that are well within my comfort zone. And sometimes there is a bad outcome. Sometimes it doesn't work out. And that leaves you in an extremely vulnerable and difficult place. Obviously, it's far worse for the woman that made those decisions. And some women come back and say, "You didn't tell me. You shouldn't have let me. If I'd understood, I wouldn't have made those choices." And then that's really harsh. And you have to understand that that's their way of dealing with what's happened to them, and that their pain and distress needs them to rationalize that. And it's really difficult. And it's really difficult not to find that that changes your practice and influences the conversations you have with the next person. But it's not always like that when things go wrong. Other times there's been a less good outcome. I've had women who have rationalised it. "Well, I'm glad I made those choices, because if I'd made other choices, I would have blamed that on whatever the outcome was." And as I've said, they feel they were heard, they were listened to. What was important to them was respected, and however distressing and upsetting the outcome may have been, either for mother or baby, they felt that they made the right choices. And I do grapple with this, and I do find it difficult. And it's difficult as the obstetrician at one end of the spectrum. And in fact, had a great meeting across London with some fellow obstetricians that are supporting so-called care outside of guidance or more personalised care, about how we might network together a bit more, because there are maybe one or two obstetricians in each unit that are supporting this more personalised care, or get to see the women that want something a bit different or a bit more wacky, because staff know that those particular obstetricians may be a bit more amenable to listen and support them. It can leave us as quite vulnerable and with difficult emotions, and therefore being able to network and connect with other obstetricians that are doing similar, whether that's in your region or up and down the country, can be really helpful. And in fact, one of the contributors to the Personalised Care Institute training is the wonderful Sarah Winfield, my fellow Fab Obs obstetrician, who is in the Northeast. And I do grapple with responsibility when women make choices that I find, even for me, push me way outside my comfort zone. And that's where working in partnership with my consultant midwife is really helpful. It means we're both not out on a limb on our own. But equally, one of the wisest things I heard was from Dr. Rachel Reed on the Midwife's Cauldron podcast, in one of the episodes about working in the system. She talked about the fact that if a woman, you give her all the information, it's well-informed consent, if she chooses to jump off a cliff, I know that sounds dramatic, but this is how Dr. Rachel Reed described it. If she chooses to jump off a cliff, you don't have to jump off the cliff with her. You've given her all the information about what's going to happen when she jumps off the cliff. It's hard to stand and watch her jump off the cliff, but you don't have to jump off too. And that may sound a bit weird out of context, so maybe go and listen to that episode of The Midwife's Cauldron. But that's helped me understand that it's my job to try and provide the right information so that the woman can make that personalised decision. But it's not my responsibility. In the same way that I've said she's autonomous, she can make decisions about her birth, those are her decisions, and she's taking responsibility for those decisions. I think that's pretty much it for this episode. So what about a zesty bit? Well, if you haven't done the Personalised Care Institute e-learning, it's a great little resource. Doesn't take long, maybe an hour or so. And it's really valuable in helping you think through personalised care planning. I'm also going to put some other links in the show notes. If you're a pregnant woman listening to this, then absolutely, it is your choice what you do, what birth preferences or care during pregnancy, because there are personalised preferences there too, which we need to work with, although that's a bit less common. Know that when we're giving you risks and benefits and written information, it really is because we're trying to provide you with the ability to make that informed consent. And when we're suggesting other things, we really are well-meaning. We're not meaning to press gang you into doing something you don't want to do. And if you're struggling to get on with the midwife that you're seeing, then again, you can ask for an appointment with a consultant midwife. A lot of units do have them now, or a consultant obstetrician, and ask around, find out who local to you might be a bit more amenable to help making a personalised care plan that's a bit different. that contains what's important to you, because we're not quite up to speed yet. We're catching up, we're getting there, but if you can't get what you want where you're booked, then there are other routes to explore. And don't feel that it isn't, that we don't care. We absolutely do.
I very much hope you found this episode of the OBS Pod interesting. If you have, it'd be fantastic if you could subscribe, rate and review on whatever platform you find your podcasts, as well as recommending the OBS Pod to anyone you think might find it interesting. There's also tons of episodes to explore in my back catalogue, from clinical topics, my career and journey as an obstetrician, and life in the NHS more generally. I'd like to assure women I care for that I take confidentiality very seriously and take great care not to use any patient identifiable information unless I have expressly asked the permission of the person involved on that rare occasion when it's been absolutely necessary. If you found this episode interesting and want to explore the subject a little more deeply, don't forget to take a look at the programme notes where I've attached some links. If you want to get in touch to suggest topics for future episodes, you can find me at the OBS Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and you can email me theobspod@gmail.com. Finally, it's very important to me to keep the OBS Pod free and accessible to as many people as possible. But it does cost me a very small amount to keep it going and keep it live on the internet. So if you've enjoyed my episodes and by chance you do have a tiny bit to spare, you can now contribute to keep the podcast going and keep it free via my link to buy me a coffee. Don't feel under any obligation, but if you'd like to contribute, you now can. Thank you for listening.